Okay, well, it sort of falls to me after that conclusion to try and defend political science. And, you know, I'm going to have a good crack at it, but I'm going to start from the viewpoint that actually, I think it's actually quite hard, if I'm brutally honest, to defend political science as it has evolved in recent years. And I suppose what I want to do today is really argue that I feel political studies or political science is really a discipline in desperate search of its soul. It's trying to understand what it's for in society. And society is making increasingly diverse demands upon it. And in a sense, I'm very optimistic. I get a sense from talking to a lot of people that there's a lot of doom and gloom and confusion and frustration within the discipline. Well, actually, I think at the moment, political studies has an opportunity to really redefine itself and to shape the future in terms of the expectations that are around it. And I mean, I've only got 10 minutes, but a lot of my recent academic work has been around the politics of public expectations. And this, what I call gap analysis, the gap between what's demanded and what can realistically be supplied. But let me just start, and I will use a few slides just to quickly run through what I'm going to do, because we're all really here looking back and starting from Bernard Crick's In Defence of Politics, which, if you haven't read it, remains today probably more important than it was when it was published 50 years ago. And the link between Bernard's work and the focus of this session, and really my session, is that in the second edition of this book, Bernard wrote an essay as a new appendix called A Rallying Cry to the University Professors of Politics. Now, if all of you do one thing after coming to this conference, read that rallying cry. Because essentially what Bernard was arguing for was he could see the first signs of a professionalisation that was taking the study of politics away from society. He could also see the first signs of public disenchantment and disengagement with politics. And really what Bernard was doing in his own style, which was full of vigour and wit and humour and passion and a love of language that I think, to be quite honest, we've lost, he was calling out for academics, for students of politics, by which I include professors and everybody in this room. He was calling for them to really understand that as a professor of politics, you have a social role. And in a sense, his whole work wasn't just about the book or that essay. Bernard had an approach to the profession which became incredibly unfashionable. And I think today, and it's interesting, I don't know how many of you know, but Peter didn't mention he's actually on the REF panel, but we are at a time now where in some ways we can see the approach Bernard adopted as coming back into fashion. And it was an approach based on three really core strands. It was on an approach based upon bridging politics as theory with politics as practice. That was what being a professor was all about. Secondly, it was about writing in a style that was accessible. A style that you could read. And in their right, can I even say this? You could enjoy reading. You know, if we're brutally honest, when was the last time we read a political science book that we really enjoyed reading, that stimulated us, that fired our passions? We study, if we're honest, emotions, passions, love, hate, war, violence. Our work does not reflect that passion at all. In a sense, politics is, you could even say, it's become depoliticised. And more importantly, the third strand of Bernard's approach, which is where we get to the impact agenda that will be so important in this conference, is that Bernard really believed that as an academic of politics, you had a social obligation to society more broadly beyond the university lecture room. He believed that if you were going to be a professor of politics, your role was to help engage and inform and cultivate public debates so that the public understood why politics matters. I really do believe that the decline that we have in political science is related to the rise of disaffected Democrats. Because if political scientists around the world have told the public one thing, it's generally that politicians aren't to be trusted. Political scientists have done as much to spread the bad faith model of politics as have the media and all the other people, the satirists, the bloggers, and everybody else that we can blame. So, In a sense, what's very interesting is that I don't actually think many people within the profession understand the scale of the challenges we face. This man on the screen now is Senator Tom Coburn, who many of you will know in America. He's the senator that has tried to make political science funding ineligible for any more public monies. And he got quite far with this, because he basically argued political science is a waste of money, it has no real-world impact or relevance, the public don't understand it, practitioners of politics can't engage with it, why are we funding it in an age of austerity? Now, in the UK, we do not face debates as clear as that. But I think actually there is a more implicit environment where we have, as a profession, become disconnected. And the PSA is working really hard to try and close the gap that has evolved. I spend too much time away in the Palace of Westminster or Whitehall or travelling and working with politicians. I did this radio series, and one of the questions I started with was to former prime ministers and permanent secretaries was, are there any pieces of political research or books by political scientists that have been particularly influential in your career? That question was met with either embarrassed quiet, laughter, or complete and utter, that's such a ridiculous question, I had to stop asking it. It's funny, but in a way it's not funny. We should be far more visible as a profession. So, I think it's true. I hate to say this, I think we have all, and myself included, we've engaged in too much methodological masturbation, or a fetishism. Did I say masturbation? Can I say that at this conference? Sorry, I've got a little bit of history already. A footnote in the PSA's history. Methodological masturbation and this sort of fetishism for theory. We're dancing on the heads of pins while the real world goes on without us, to be quite honest. And so in a sense, we've slipped within this very good work, Shapiro's, The Flight from Reality. We have all formed part of this flight away from the real world. Now, this leads me to the defence, because obviously we're looking back and we're saying, you know, Crick had an approach to scholarship that was very, very civically minded. And we might say that 50 years later, and I think this is a very valid argument that I do try and tell politicians and people within the system, is that actually the role of an academic has changed. Bernard Crick wrote 3 books at the beginning of his career. The American Science of Politics, that was his PhD revised. He wrote the In Defense of Politics. Then he wrote, this is testing me, he wrote The Reform of Parliament. He didn't write another book for 2 decades when he then published his biography of Orwell. Now, I would love to be able to think I could have 2 decades to write 1 book. That is not the world we're in. Now, this brings me to another really important point. That in a sense, we have more demands on us academically. We have the teaching demands, and we've got the 2012 agenda coming up. We've got the REF agenda. We've got to get our 4- and 3-star pieces of work. And we've got increasing admin and bureaucracy around us. We, in many ways, are all public sector workers. And now, on top of this system, we've got a 4th dimension, which is the whole impact, social relevance agenda. And I even turned on the radio this morning, and I hear Michael Gove wants university lecturers now to take more responsibility for designing, teaching, and marking A-levels. So the expectations gap on us, you know, I am fully aware of the demands that are all on us in this room. And in a sense, I want to try and close this gap, and I think we can do it not by necessarily working harder, but by working smarter. And I think too many of us have become almost depressed academically, and I was talking to Chris Mullin, and he was he has this idea. He talks about his former constituents when he was an MP, and he said too many of them had what he called chronic whinger syndrome, that he would do everything he could and they would never ever stop asking for more, or moaning. I think some, to be brutally honest, a lot of political scientists have got to something parallel to that. In fact, we have great opportunities ahead of us, but what we are not doing is adapting to those opportunities. And so let me just give you one little idea, as we're all supposed to be doing our impact portfolios, embedding ways of reaching out. It's in a sense, it's very simple. What we need to get better at is what I call triple writing. Triple writing part one is what we've always done. This debate about impact isn't about whether you do one thing or another. You don't do top class, world class scholarship, or you reach out and engage. They come together. Level one writing is those 4-star returns that you will always write. They can be written in the most jargonistic way you want to write them, for any journal you want to write them. What we need to be better at is the second and third phase writing. The second phase writing would be writing pieces for David's Institute that would be disseminated to practitioners, interest groups, or the media at large. And then the third phase of writing would be pumping out very short, very accessible pieces on websites, for the newspapers, wherever. This is actually really good fun, but it does involve learning new skills. And of course, our promotion systems are still heavily focused on the phase one writing. What's very interesting is that the whole impact agenda and the next ref is putting a lot more emphasis now on this phase two and three. Now, you might say, well, gosh, it's all right saying that, but journalists don't want it, select committee clerks, they don't want it. They are absolutely desperate. I write for the broadsheets. I do too much work in Parliament. I've just found out, reading the brochure, I've got 4 kids and a wife somewhere. I've got to track them down soon. But I talk to commissioning editors of newspapers, and I say, why don't you get more political scientists to write to you? And they tell me, one, I can't find them. And when I do find them, they're not interested in doing it. And when I have asked them to do it, what they've sent me was completely unpublishable, because they can't write in human. But writing in human is very, it's actually really easy. If you've done your big first phase piece of scholarship, then developing it into a number of short, pithy, clear hooked pieces of work, it's pretty easy, and it's quite good fun. But what I'm saying is, there is a demand out there. Anyone can do it. I went to Australia. I was giving a paper at the University of Sydney, and we were talking about these issues, and this lady really attacked me. She said, how dare you come over to Australia telling us about engagement? You don't know how hard it is to do it. You're not Australian. Well, I said, okay. I was on the beach yesterday with my children, and I was reading The Australian, which is their main newspaper, and I had an idea, because I was there when their coalition was being formed. So I had an idea to write a little piece that looked at what had happened in the British coalition vis-a-vis what was going on in Australia. So I opened the first page of the newspaper, and there it said, editor at theaustralian.org/australia. I emailed the editor. Within half an hour, she'd emailed back. My piece was in The Australian the next day. It's not hard, you just need to be proactive and come up with good ideas. There is a real demand for us out there. So, in a sense, this is a bit silly, but let's be silly, let's have some fun. What I really want, and I was very taken, I don't know if it was Peter or David that said it, somebody said fire in your belly, and that really struck with me, because I think as a profession and as academics, we need to get a bit more fire in our bellies about being braver and being more aggressive about reaching out and writing in a style that might not fit the mainstream. I mean, I've just written a book which isn't designed for academics, but we have this real problem. We have a real cultural obstacle that says, if you write for a broad audience as an academic, you've sold out. Lots of big academics that have done it have suffered in their careers, because then they're seen as a media don. We seem to have this problem that we define reaching out and writing in an accessible manner as dumbing down. They're not the same things. If anyone reads my book and thinks it's painting by numbers, I'll give you the money back myself. You can write in an incredibly stimulating, demanding and sophisticated way, but it can be accessible to a very big audience. And again, I would say, on the footnote issue, there's a freedom to writing that I think we've lost. And it's about learning to fly. So, this guy here, this is C. Wright Mills. C. Wright Mills wrote a book around the same time as Crick called The Sociological Imagination. Although in it, he admits it could be called The Political Imagination. What C. Wright Mills had, and what Crick had in spades, was fire in his belly. They both possessed the sociological or political imagination, which was a belief that being academic brings with it a need to swim against the tide and to challenge basic assumptions and to reach out constantly to new audiences. We don't have Crick anymore. C. Wright Mills died very young. But the sociological imagination is still fantastic. And I think as a profession, what we need to rediscover is our political imaginations. And that's what I talk about in my book, and we can discuss now.